This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Today we're here in Scolcara Allen in Mulhuddard in Dublin to do Deadly Moons, which is my workshop. It's a drawing workshop. We're going to learn a little bit about our moon and some of the other really exotic, cool moons in the solar system, some of them you've never heard of. My name is Deirdre Kelligan. I'm an astronomer. I'm also an artist. I like to draw. So when I come to groups like this, I like to tell you a whole bunch of stuff about astronomy and space, planets and things like that. I'm going to give you a presentation about space exploration, right from Apollo up to the Mars Science Laboratory. And then we're going to go back through the images and you'll pick the one you want to draw for yourself. So, you know, we just have a little chat here just about what do you know about space or anything to do with space? Do you know much about it?
I know how to say all the planets in the solar system.
You do not. Go on and give them to me.
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune.
Excellent. Anybody else know anything about space exploration or, I mean, what is space?
What's there like in Mars?
In the corner there?
Neil Armstrong was the first man on the moon.
Excellent.
Pluto was not a planet anymore because the scientists found out that it was a dwarf planet.
That's really good that you remember that.
Jupiter is the biggest planet.
Excellent. Anybody else know anything at all about anything to do with space or rockets or anything?
I don't know.
The sun is a ball of fire. That's kind of an understatement, but it's quite good. Yeah.
It is 4 times from the sun.
Yep.
There's 8 planets in the solar system.
Excellent. You're all quite well informed. And what do you think about the moon? Do you know anything about the moon?
Did astronauts find water on the moon?
That's not astronauts, but a spacecraft has found that there is a lot of ice water in the North Pole and the South Pole of the moon, deep inside craters that the sun never ever gets to shine on. So that's a very interesting new.
I watched something on the TV, on the sci-fi, and it said on sci-fi Bad Universe, and there's a guy called Paul and he was telling us everything about space and what it does, and they might be like robots or big alien ships or UFOs, but the best place to see UFOs or aliens is in New Mexico.
Wow. Who knows anything about our moon right now?
I think that you can do a slam dunk, like jump up and do that.
With what?
Like with no bubble, like just jump up and do
it. Oh, and you're on the moon?
Yeah.
Because, why do you think that is?
We have no gravity in space.
And you're very clever. Yeah, over here.
The Earth's moon looks like a glass ball.
Like a which?
A glass ball. It's wow. It looks like it's made of glass.
Okay. Yeah.
The holes in the moon are called craters.
Excellent. This is what I like to hear.
The Russians and the Americans, they were having a bit of a fight because they wanted to be. Russians wanted to be the first persons in space.
In olden times, people thought that the Earth was flat, so they didn't travel too far on ships.
That's very true, because they thought they'd fall over the edge, because they were scared. And have any of you people ever heard of Dunsink Observatory? It's only up the road from here. Has anybody ever heard of it?
My mum told me a few bits of it because I went with my mum. They have like lots of satellites all around this place and a big telescope to see all the planets.
Yeah, they have a big telescope out there, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what an observatory is?
Yeah.
What is an observatory?
It's a place where most of the people know about space, and they use the big telescope so they can see if there's an asteroid coming, or to tell them about if... Because if on Sunday there's Sunday or Tuesday there's a big starlight show on, and they there's like shooting stars going around the planet, so that's what they do to look at the big.
Going to talk about the presentation and the drawing workshop and you know, stuff that might have interested you and what you learned in it, and you know like, let's say in the presentation, you know, was there a particular rocket or robot that you'd never heard of that you thought was really amazing? Anybody?
Yes. The Curiosity robot.
You really liked that, did you?
Yeah.
What did you think was amazing about it? Like,
that it shoots lasers.
Yeah. Can you remember what it did with the laser?
It takes samples of rocks and gives information to Earth.
Excellent. So it does, yeah. And what did you like that one as well, or?
No, I think the interest in, do you know that alien shape rocket that was going to land on Mars?
The one that you drew, the Huygens probe, that was going to land on Titan. And what did you draw?
I draw Sputnik.
Yeah, that was an unusual choice. And yeah, what made you go for that one?
I just like the look of it and all.
Yeah?
Yeah. And it's all metal and all. And I was amazed that the things that come out of it is 29 metres.
Yeah, the antennae sticking out of it, yeah. You know, if you were to design a spacecraft yourself, like if you were to think about it for a while, you know, what kind of a spacecraft would you like to design?
It's kind of like a future, it's a bit like, you know, have you ever watched Star Trek?
Yeah.
It's going to be a bit like that in the future, but with lots of like energy to blast off to one of the stars.
I would make a memorial of two of the spacecrafts. Like, one of them is Columbia and one of them Challenger. Like the same thing, instead a little bit more creative with different colors in it.
That's good.
And where would you put the memorial to the people that died in those disasters? Where would you put that?
Like, tell people to give us pictures of them, and then, like, you see the way beside the gates to NASA and all that, like, I'll put make line for the Columbia and the line for Challenger, the crews each side.
That's really very nice good idea. What would you like to say?
I'd like to go to all the planets and get samples, see if there's life on any planet.
And when you grow up now, would anybody here like, would they think they might like to be a scientist or an engineer that would build a spacecraft like what we've seen in the presentation? Would you like to be?
Yeah, I would, but I wouldn't like to be in there, like, spatial or going into space.
Oh, would you not? Would you be afraid to go to space?
Yeah, because, like if you wanted to see your wife and your kids and everything, and you don't get to meet them because you have to stay and work there, like, for, like, 20 or 30 years.
Would you like to be an engineer? Or?
I'd like to be a scientist.
You'd like to be a scientist, yeah?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to invent stuff and see how it works out to be, like, I don't care about the money, I just want to see if my stuff, my imagination and the stuff that I do might end up being in the future.
Yeah, but
that's brilliant. Did any of you guys ever look up at the sky in the evening and see Jupiter? Did you ever?
No, but I can see Venus. I can see Venus.
Venus is quite low at the moment, but it's very bright. But if you just keep looking up a bit higher, you'll see Jupiter.
Well,
and that's where, like, the Juno spacecraft is going to. Okay, has anybody ever drawn stars before, or does anybody know what a star is? How does it start?
It's a thing when it's bright, it's someone like that's dead in their family and will be looking down at you.
Oh, wow. I never heard that explanation before. What is a star?
I think a star is a small sun.
Small suns. Anybody else?
No, small
it's
moon.
Another planet.
Planets?
Small moons.
Small moons, wow. Well, you know, has anybody ever looked up at the sky at night and looked at the stars and the patterns? Do you know what the patterns of stars are called?
Constellations.
Excellent. And do you know the names of any constellations?
Sagittarius.
Yep. Anybody else got another
one? North Star.
Hmm?
North Star.
The North Star. Anybody else got a name of a constellation that they might look up at the sky and go, oh yeah, I know that one. No? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to have a look at some constellations and some star patterns in the sky. So you just get kind of a little idea what that is, you know what I mean? Because like, if you looked up at the sky and you saw all the stars and it didn't have a pattern, you know, then, you know, you need patterns and shapes to recognise things so that you remember them and where they are in relation to each other. You know what I mean? And they have names to help you remember what they are. So we just have a quick look at this now for a second. You can see here, there's some dots on the screen here, but they don't look like anything at all, really, do they? They just look like dots on the screen. But we can put on them, on these lines, which gives you a sense of the shape of the constellation. So up here we have, this one here is called the Plough, right? There's 1, 2, 3, 4 stars in the main part of it, or sometimes it's called a saucepan because it looks like a pot. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, that'd be like your little saucepan on your cooker at home in your kitchen, yeah? And then you have these stars here which makes the handle. Now, in this particular constellation, these two stars are the ones that are the really, really, really important ones because these are called the guide stars. And you can shoot your eye over here and they point directly to the pole star. Somebody mentioned that a few minutes ago. And the pole star is the North Star. And actually, in fact, it's a really dim star, huh?
We said that.
You said that.
North Star.
Yeah, you mentioned that. You had that bit of knowledge. But the pole star, most people think, oh, it's a really bright star, but it's not. It's really dim and it's really dull. And the way you find it is by, first of all, finding the saucepan or the plough or Ursa Major, the big bear, and figuring out the guide stars, shooting your eye up and you find the pole star. Now, the interesting thing about the pole star is it appears to be not moving, right? It just appears to be not moving. In fact, what's happening is the Earth is rotating and the stars appear to rotate around the pole star. Also, like, all the stars appearing to move around the pole star at night. And there's all kinds of mythology about stars. So, you know, as I say, not everything looks like what it's supposed to look like. You know, like, say, Ursa Minor here is a little bear. I mean, it doesn't really look like a bear at all, does it? It looks like a rectangle with a stick coming out of it. But, you know, there's all these sort of myths and legends about stars and the zodiac and all that kind of stuff. And as the night goes on, you see quite a lot of stars. And there you have Taurus the Bull there, which is, you know, Taurus is also a zodiac constellation or a zodiac description. But you have, a completely different arrangement of stars. It doesn't look like a bull, but up here it's supposed to look like the nose of the bull, and you've got different kinds of stars inside in the pattern. And for Orion, which we're going to be dealing with now in a few minutes, that probably is one of the constellations that looks most like what it's supposed to look like. And we'll be dealing with that in a few minutes. He's a big giant in the sky, a big mythical giant, and he's got his dog here just below him, Canis Major, that's what it's supposed to look like anyway. And below that is Lepus the rabbit, and you've got Taurus over here. And you know, all the patterns have names and then they have mythology connected with them as well. So stories go with each constellation. They help you remember them too. Do you know, like Orion is out hunting. So there's a whole story about what he's doing, what action he's taken. So you can kind of read up on that, and then you, when you figure out where Orion is in the sky, then you can figure out where everything else is. And like Orion and Cassiopeia and a few other constellations, they're always appearing to be rotating around a pole star, and they're called circumpolar constellations because they never go below the horizon. They're always there, you know. So they're worth kind of locking yourself onto even just one, so that you will then recognize that forever for the rest of your life, and then you figure out the rest of them because they're either above it, below it, or beside it. Yeah, what do you want to say?
Jupiter. Is it Jupiter back that way?
Well, planets, let me see now what planets we've got at the minute. We have to and we'll have a little spin around here and see what planets are
Jupiter.
Up. We have Jupiter there in the west. Now, that'll be tonight at 10 o'clock. Jupiter is looking, actually, you can see Jupiter from 6 o'clock. Just as it's getting dark now, you can see it above your house. So we just covered that now. What did you want to say about the stars and the constellations?
Do you know the North Star thing and the way it was bending?
Bending? The stars in the handle?
Yeah.
You know,
it looked like a butcher knife on the handle was all the way bent up like that.
Well, it's whatever pattern you see, but it's kind of might be nicer to think of it as a pot. Yeah.
How many constellations are there?
There are 88 constellations. So that's what I'm saying. Like, if you got one into your head this winter, you got, you know, 87 to go for the rest of your life. But you pick one, and then you learn the other ones, you know? Mm-hmm. This is actually a free software that you can download called Stellarium. It's free, and, you know, it can show you the night sky tonight or at any time of the day or night, you know, because some planets are visible in the daylight. And, you know, loads and loads of information within it. And you can also zoom in, which is quite good, because you see, Jupiter has four moons that you'd see in a small pair of binoculars or a telescope, but they go around the planet, right? So with your eyes through the telescope, you would see three one side, one the other side, or whatever. The following night, there might be two over here, and the other two might be there. And they all appear to be the same size, but they're not. And, you know, there's Io, Callisto, Europa, and Ganymede. But for you to know which one is which, you need a piece of software like this, so that you can zoom in, see, and see where they are at any given time of the night. You know, so you can move in time on again. See them, Jane? Look at Io there, and Europa. They're all moving. All the moons are moving. And sometimes Io there would be going in front of the planet, and you'd see it like a little black dot going across the disk of Jupiter. And it's quite nice to watch because it actually goes quite fast. You'd be quite surprised. But it's a good little piece of software, and the fact that it's free is also a real benefit to people.
Did you ever see an eclipse?
I did, actually. I saw an eclipse. Last eclipse I saw was on the 21st of December 2010, and it was snowing. I didn't think I was going to be able to see this eclipse because it was snowing. It was -7. Do you remember last, you know, that winter?
Oh, yeah.
It was like, oh. Yeah, so I was very lucky because I got up really early. I got up about 6 or something like that. There was a bit of a gap in the cloud, and I got to see it, and I got to draw it, and I included it in a chapter in a book that I've just published. So thanks for asking that question. Okay, as I was saying, this telescope was built by the Grubb Company in Observatory Lane in Dublin. In Observatory Lane, to build these telescopes, they employed 100 people. They gave 100 people very high-tech work, if you think of it. You know, not too long after the Irish famine, to build telescopes like this, that not just this telescope, but telescopes that were sent out to Chile, you know, in South America, telescopes that were sent up to Stockholm in Sweden, in England, to Greenwich and to Hirschmannsau, and to other countries in the world, because the Grubb telescope firm were world-renowned. They were world leaders in building telescopes. And this telescope was erected here in 1868. This telescope is 18 foot long, okay? And the lens is 11 3/4 inches. And this is the finder scope. This is, you have to line this up with the object that you want to look at. And then when you have it in here and you have it dead centre, there's little crosshairs in here, you know, like on a gun sight.
Yeah.
Little crosshairs. And when you have your moon or your planet right in the middle there, then it's right in the middle here, right? Now, if you don't have it in the middle there, it's never, ever going to be in the middle here. And it's the same with any telescope. Like with my telescope, I have to line up my finder scope and then it will be in my main telescope, you know. So you really, really need your little finder scopes to do a good bit of work for you. And then these here things are for focusing it in so you can fine-tune it for your own eye and get it right in there, you know. So you've got really crispy craters and crispy valleys and crispy mountains on the moon, and with Jupiter to get the banding on the planet, to get the to see the different gases and the different colour layers, the bands and the zones on Jupiter. You need to be able to focus it in. And then, like with, let's say, Saturn, focusing it in and getting the rings just perfect so you can see the gap between the planet and the rings and the Cassini division inside in the rings. So you can do all that with this telescope. And you can look at the Andromeda Galaxy, which always looks crazy. It's a big, crazy, fuzzy object, but it's a galaxy that we can see from our galaxy, which is very interesting. And, you know, this telescope is used for public outreach. It's used like this to show people the telescope. Students and kids and all kinds of groups come here. Now, to operate the telescope, you have to open the roof, okay? And so what happens is then you open the roof, it only opens that little gap, right? And then let's imagine that the moon is there. And then you got to line the telescope up and it moves really nice, really easy. So you can move it like that. And then inside in here, there's a brass clockwork mechanism for you to wind up a weight, right? And then over about 40 minutes, the weight drops. And in that time, what happens is the cogs and the wheels and, you know, mechanical things help the telescope to stay in line with the object that you're looking at. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Track it across the sky. But then after 30, 40 minutes, you've got to get back up there and wind the yoke up again, and off you go again. Now, you can actually just move it anyway. But if you were doing a drawing like sometimes I do, it's nice to have the telescope tracking the object so you don't have all that trouble. And you can have your both hands free and, you know, you're not thinking about it too much. So what happens is then, if you, you know, after a while, you see the way the gap is kind of smallish? The moon or whatever would have moved, you know? And you need to move the whole roof to catch up with it. So you have to turn on the motor, because it's all motorized now. So let's get this together. So I just want to show you that this is motorized now. And, you know, like, say, let's say the moon has moved on or the Earth has rotated, and then we need to move the telescope on again so that we can see the moon for another 20 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever you're going to get. So that's kind of like basically what happens. And the roof is made of wood. And then you have all these lovely...
wood.
Yeah, wooden. It's actually wood on the inside and lovely copper on the outside.
It looks metal.
It kind of does because it's painted black. But on the outside, it's copper, which is metal. And then the building itself is made of lovely cut stone. And it's a lovely... I love the shape of this room. Do you?
Yeah.
I think it's gorgeous.
Would you like it as a bedroom?
I can't hear
shape.
You.
You know, you know the way you said you like the shape? Would you like to have it as your bedroom? Like your bedroom.
Oh my God, what an idea to have this as my bedroom.
With right? The telescope and
yeah, yeah, and then I could get up. Let's see, tonight awesome. I could get up. At what time is it? About 2 o'clock in the morning. And see asteroid called Eros. in the sky. People are looking at asteroid Eros now. I'd love to see it, but it's quite dim and quite small. So maybe this telescope would show it to me if I was lucky enough to have my bed here and I could get up at any time of the night and look.
You can just have a camp here. Just
sleeping bag. Wouldn't it be great? We could have sleeping bags here. And then as soon as the sky cleared, we could get the telescope ready and we could go looking at the moon or Jupiter or whatever it is we want to look at. Wouldn't it be brilliant?
Yeah, that'd be good.
But you know, I'd love to have this in my back garden.
Yeah.
But the thing about you guys is you only live down the road, so you practically do have it in your back garden. So all you got to do is, you know, get your mum and dad and stuff to ring up and get yourselves here, you know, or your school, and come here in the evening, you know, at night, and we can look at all kinds of things, you know. Like, it'd be really, really cool if you got interested enough to come, and you're only down the road, so it's only a few minutes, you know what I mean? People come from all over the country to look through this telescope. Do you know that? Especially in Science Week, they come from everywhere. But you're only, what, 5 miles away, 6 miles away, so it is in your back garden.
So we're proper there.
So that's the telescope. That's the Dunsink telescope. It's called the South Telescope, built by the Grubbs factory in Observatory Lane in, at Mines. So what do you think of this telescope? What's your impressions of it?
Yeah?
Amazing. Amazing. Anybody else?
Pretty places.
Super.
Well, I think it's humongous. Booyah! And I love being in here, actually. And one time I got an opportunity to do a drawing of the moon through this telescope, standing on these steps here, you know, one very cold night. And I really enjoyed that. Now, another fantastic connection between Dunsink Observatory and space. You know, the scientists that work at Dunsink Observatory and connection with Dunsink Observatory have been involved with NASA missions and ESA missions for years and years and years. And the Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies connected with here, all the scientists connected with here, right? They built an experiment called the EPONA, and it was to do with this spacecraft Giotto, which was sent up by the European Space Agency to go chasing after this comet and try and get as close as possible to it as the spacecraft could. And all the mathematics that Hamilton thought about also helped that mission to get to its target. And the experiment that was, you know, made by the scientists connected with this observatory went up, and it actually was able to measure the particles coming off the comet in space, you know? And this is a photograph of Halley's Comet taken by the Giotto probe. And another connection with Dunsink Observatory is that a scientist called Cho Kang and another fellow called Donald Yeoman from JPL NASA. Now, Cho Kang worked for the Dublin Institute of Advanced Studies. And these two fellows together, they went and they tracked back the orbit of Halley's Comet way back to about 240 BC. So they did an awful lot of work on that whole thing. But listening in, I think the drawings you did were brilliant, and I think you were very good at paying attention. And I'm really delighted that you had so much information already. I thought that was great.
Thank you.
And you learned a lot, do you think?
Yeah.
You learned a lot of stuff. And you got some the eyes on the solar system to learn more stuff and keep in touch with it all, you know. So thanks very much for taking part in the workshop.
Yeah.
And for taking part in this little chat, which was really cool. Thank you.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.